What is the difference between a geek and a nerd? Here to discuss that and a whole lot more is my friend Caitlin Lanning on this episode of Shiflitcast. All right, so welcome to episode, what is this? Episode 12? 13. And I am joined by a very good friend of mine, Caitlin Lanning. Caitlin, who are you and how do we know each other?
Oh dear. I'll answer the latter first because that's easier. I know you through a dear mutual friend of mine. And we met, I believe, in 2011. So that makes it almost 10 years since we've known each other. I am currently an office assistant at an unnamed company or a company I shall leave unnamed. My current goal is to become a high school English teacher that is in secondary education. And I'm all around a pretty geeky, pretty nerdy, pretty happy gal. So I think that sums me up pretty well. So I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah, thank you. Geeky, nerdy, and happy. I like that. What is the difference between a geek and a nerd?
You know, that's a good question. I've always heard the trifecta as being geek, nerd, dork. Dork, I believe, is socially inept and not as well versed in their own nerdery, as you would call it. Nerd is more, a little more socially accurate and very into their stuff still, though. And geek is socially inept, but knows their stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I always thought, well, this is what I heard. I wonder if every person hears something different.
There's probably
a lot of different takes on the geek and nerd difference. But one of them is a nerd is kind of knows a lot about everything, whereas a geek kind of specializes in some particular thing. Like I'm a sci-fi geek or I'm a Star Wars geek. But I've also heard it interchanged, like I'm a Star Wars nerd.
Yes, the two terms are very interchangeable in a way.
All right, well, that's neither important nor the topic of conversation today. So let's move on. It's New Year's. It is, well, at the time of this recording, it is New Year's Day. This will air in about 6 days. But I have a couple New Year's resolutions. Have you made any New Year's resolutions?
I, in fact, have. I have three in total, actually. I narrowed it down to three just so it wasn't so insurmountable and more doable. One is to pay off about a fourth of my school loans. Another is to lose weight. I have a specified amount, but I probably won't go into that because that's a little personal. And then the other one is to get my substitute certification for teaching.
And what is the timeline on that last one? I mean, where are you in the process? You didn't just graduate high school, right? So
no, I am a graduate of Biola University with a degree in English, a minor in biblical studies. And I am working on my certification to become a full-time teacher, but with substitutes, all you need is a college degree, at least in California, and you can substitute. That is if you get the permit or the certification. So I have applied already, but I accidentally messed up on one of my application parts. Whoops. But they kindly returned that to me and told me what I needed to do. So I'm submitting it as of tomorrow and seeing if that will suffice.
All right. Fingers crossed for you. Oh, bureaucracy. Isn't it wonderful?
They had my birth date wrong, which was a little annoying.
Oh, shoot. And that like halted the process?
Yes.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, here's hoping that you get into the world of substitutes. You're not unfamiliar with the world of substitute teaching.
No, I am not. I have actually substituted before at my old high school, actually, which was a private school. So technically for private schools, private and public differ a little bit in certain arenas. With private schools, all you need is a college degree, usually in that subject area, so that you can teach. So I was contacted by my old principal, actually, because they had a teacher going on pregnancy or maternity leave because bed rest. And so they were desperate and they were like, hey, you've always shown an interest in teaching. And in fact, you were voted most likely to teach at the school in your yearbook. So I dutifully accepted and I had a blast. It was extremely hard as I had 6 different preps, which is pretty much unheard of in the public school world, but I did it. So
that's 6 different classes, not like 6 units of the same class.
No, that is 6 different classes. Yes.
And how long did you do that for?
I did that for about 4 months.
Wow, that's incredible. Were you given lesson plans, or did you have to do all your lesson planning yourself?
For the first month, I had all my own lesson plans, or all pre-prepared lesson plans. After that, they kind of let me have a baptism by fire, I suppose you could call it, where I just planned and I was very inexperienced, of course. So I threw together whatever I could and kind of saw what stuck. So, and then that worked out.
And what was your, pardon me?
For the most part.
Yeah, totally. What was your favorite thing to teach? Do you have a favorite, like you're mentioning your teaching in the area of English. Did you have a favorite novel or a favorite subject?
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, this wasn't when I was at my old school, but when I was student teaching, which I still need to do again. I was teaching The Crucible, and that's very interesting. The intersection between religion and politics, and it's very much in the forefront of the novel, and kids actually like genuinely get upset with the villains and find them to be very unlikable. And I think it's an interesting, they also don't understand the thought process of the Puritans at the time. So it's interesting to explain it to them and see their reaction, whether they can entertain the thought or not, or even semi understand it.
I remember when we went through The Crucible in high school, we actually acted it out in class. Ooh. Well, we kind of did a read through. We didn't act it out per se, but you know, everybody got characters and we read through the play and it was really fun. I don't think we did the whole thing. The teacher might have assigned us portions to read at home, and then some of the like really big scenes we would go through in class.
Yes, that's usually the case. Most teachers with plays aren't going to act out the whole thing because, one, you have readers of varying strength, and two, it just takes time.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, so paying off a loan and weight loss, mm-hmm. I'm in the same boat there, and getting into substitute teaching. That's super exciting. I wish you all the best on that. And if there's any, you know, we're close. So if there's any way that I can support you, just let me know.
Well, thank you. I received that.
Yeah. So let's hop into our very important questions. These are, they're basically conversation starters, and some are whimsical and some are thought-provoking. And I'm going to ask you to pick a random number between 1 and 5.
3. And we're back.
Okay, you pick 3. Now, I sent you a list of questions, and the question that you just picked randomly is, what is a fashion trend you are really glad went away?
I mean, looking back on the early 2000s, there are so many trends I'm glad went away. One of which being Bumpets.
Oh, Bumpets, like that attachable brain tumors.
Oh, Pretty much. Well, it's a little hair or teasing your hair or putting a bump it, which is gives you more volume, I suppose. But it looks a little ridiculous, I thought. So I am very glad the bump it went away.
Were you ever did you ever wear a bump it yourself?
No, I did not. I was not too trendy. In fact, in the 2000s, I straightened my hair pretty hardcore, poker straight thin, or as thin as I could get it. So I was not into the bump it trend.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. Yeah, my sisters definitely had bump its. I don't think they wore them very often, but when they do, I always just joke that it was like a boil that you would willfully attach to your head underneath your hair. It just was a very odd. Yeah, it was just a very odd fashion choice.
It wasn't natural.
Yeah. I would say the fashion trend that I'm really glad went away. But I don't know if it went away because I don't keep up with fashion. So as you know, I am, I wear black and some grays, and I think I have a blue shirt for festive occasions. But I guess maybe, okay, so I don't know if it went away, but the skinny jeans.
Oh.
Are the skinny jeans still a thing? Maybe the question that I'm answering is, which fashion trend do you hope goes away?
Oh, that's a good question. Skinny jeans are, I would say they're kind of lingering in a certain way, but they've certainly diminished in their presence, and straight leg and bell bottom has definitely made a comeback. So that's really nice. I never liked skinny jeans myself, especially having hips in high school. So as for the fashion trend, I hope goes away, I guess two. One is crop tops, because I just don't understand. It's like, why aren't you cold? And then two, I don't know. I personally don't think I can pull them off. So maybe that's just my selfish ambition of not having anyone else wear it, because I can't. But another thing I hope goes away is fake freckles, where girls will just like put little dots all over their face and across their nose and call it freckles. I actually have natural freckling across my face a little bit. Usually it's covered up by makeup, but people will, if I don't wear makeup, people will ask, oh, how long did that take you to do? And I'm like, that's natural. So I don't know. I kind of hope that goes away and people just embrace their natural beauty.
Yeah, fake freckles. I know someone who puts on fake freckles.
Oh, dear.
And I actually think they have natural freckles, but they like want to add more and make like a constant, like a universe of freckles.
I see.
So that's really odd. Now, explain to the listeners, especially those like me, who have no idea about the fashion world, what is a crop top?
A crop top is a shirt that does not cover your midsection or abdomen. Right now, the trend is high-rise jeans and a crop top that basically just covers your chest, maybe a little further down, but your belly or abdomen is exposed.
That's right. Okay. I know the crop top. Yeah. So what's natural beauty? That's a whole other topic, but yeah, there's still this tendency to, my cat is snoring in the background. I don't know if you can hear him.
I cannot. The microphone has not picked it up.
Okay, good. Yeah, there's a tendency in our culture to be overly made up and to change your appearance and to, just alter yourself in such a way where you feel like you need to put on a show almost.
Yes. Yes. I think it's become quite prevalent in both Eastern and Western cultures. I think it was the advent of social media and just even with photography, makeup was invented basically purely because people saw themselves in photos and were like, oh my gosh, I look hideous, or that doesn't look good. I mean, there was makeup back in like 1500s, 1400s and everything for purely, of course, cosmetic sake, but also covering illnesses. Like, for example, the beauty mark was for covering syphilis at the time. But makeup has evolved such that it changes, people use it often to change their entire appearance and even do so with their hair and their face. Or I've heard of people who have done stuff to their nether regions, or even like will draw on abs basically when they go to the beach and not go in the water so their abs don't wash off. So it's a very odd and interesting concept, but I think it goes much too far these days.
Yeah, it almost points out this sort of deep restlessness we have, this kind of chronic unease we have with being in our own skin. Like we're not enough. We're not good enough. We're not sufficient, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's, several things. I think as there's a natural want in humans for symmetry, and we're not naturally symmetrical. Actually, if you split your face straight down the middle, your two sides are going to look different. And I think there's a natural want of beauty, and that's a natural innate thing in our soul to want beauty and aesthetics, basically, as the kids call it these days, aesthetics. And I also think that, like you said, it's hard to sit in your own skin because it's very hard to change. And then two, you are your biggest critic and you see all your flaws, and that's hard to sit with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you talked a little bit about the rise of social media, and there's this phenomenon where it probably happened just a few days ago over the New Year's weekend, where we are seeing the highlight reels of our friends and families. We're not mm-hmm. seeing the depression. We're not seeing the depravity. We're not seeing the sin. We're seeing the good moments, the highlights, the high points. We're seeing their faces made up, and you know, they may have taken 15 pictures and then they picked the best picture to put on Instagram. That's what we're seeing. And that does something, I think, to the human psyche when you're looking at social media and all you see is everyone else's highlights and you don't see the low points, and you feel like there can be this feeling of, well, I'm not allowed to have any low points because it appears that none of my friends do.
I think it already has affected us and our several generations already. There's a great sociologist or psychologist, I can't recall, but her name's Jean Twenge. She's done a study and studied teens for decades, and she noted how drastically depression rates skyrocketed in 2007 now and have been going up ever since. Now, in 2007, something important came out, the iPhone and the infinite scroll. So ever since, she's seen teens more and more depressed and less likely to go out and actually socialize with each other due to the advent of social media. That's at least her opinion and from what her research shows. So we do have an entire generation that is anxiety ridden and feels they aren't good enough. Or we have people who glamorize whatever they feel is good, and they'll have internet social circles, to condone whatever they're doing.
Now, you and I read a book, and we didn't read it together, but yes, we read it at separate times, called How to Break Up with Your Phone.
Hey.
It's a kind of manual for digital minimalism. That's actually the name of another book called by Cal Newport called Digital Minimalism. But what did you, I don't know, this is, I know I'm not going on to the next very important question, but this is an interesting road to go down. What did you think of that book? And have you implemented any of those things? Excuse me.
I have read the book, yes. I actually didn't quite finish it because I got to the part where you're supposed to implement things and I didn't, of course. I did take away some stuff from it though and realized how much social media and my phone has addicted my monkey brain, as they call it. And I'm keen to finish it and implement some things, but I do think there is something to be said for one, sleep hygiene, two, just spiritual hygiene from your phone. There are so many things that we can have access to on our phone and it's almost infinite. And I think both are very intertwined.
Yeah, totally. Pick another number, 1 through 5.
1.
Okay. What do you bring with you everywhere you go?
I of course, as most women, have a purse. So I bring that basically everywhere with me, but my phone, a planner, my wallet, and a book.
Okay. So several questions come to mind. Okay. As you list those off, your planner, that sounds old school and awesome. You don't keep a calendar in your phone or do you prefer the kind of analog writing things down?
I am a huge proponent of physically writing things down. They've actually shown in studies that if you physically write things down, there's the kinetic connection to your brain that makes you remember it better. And then two, I've just found it works for me. I am diagnosed with ADD and I need something. And I have used my phone in the past to keep appointments, but I found it very irritating and I wanted to eliminate that. So I got a planner and I'm like, I can write this how I want. I can put details in that I want. Not that you couldn't with your phone, but excuse me. And I just find it works and it's great.
And yeah, there are a lot of different, I mean, search YouTube for like planners, journals, whatever. You have all sorts of different options. The one that comes to mind is the bullet journal.
Oh gosh.
Do you, well, now I want to hear your thoughts on the bullet journal, but do you have a particular method that you employ for your planner, or is it just basically a calendar? What is Caitlin Lanning's planner look like?
Well, it's currently it's red and it's a Moleskine. I usually put in my things per each day. I also have a side little section where I can put things that I want to accomplish through the week, whether it be on Monday or Friday or Thursday. That just need to get done, but aren't really high priority.
Is it one of those ones where the left side of the page is the week, Sunday through Saturday, and the right side is like lines?
Yes, yes, that is correct.
Nodding vociferously.
Yes, that is correct. And then I actually tried to bullet journal once. You were leading into that, but the bullet journal I have found I get too persnickety with and can't quite be creative with because I'm too focused on creating an aesthetic or certain beauty within the bullet journal. I just can't do it. So, and I think there's been a community around the bullet journal that has popped up and makes it seem like a big, great solution. And it can be for people, but it also comes with its problems.
Yeah, as every system does, not every system fits with every person's needs. And that's one of the reasons why there's not just one system, but a lot to encompass everyone. Now, I had a second question. A book. You mentioned that you bring a book with you everywhere you go. Is it the same book, or do you cycle through books?
I try to cycle through books, and I mean, like, I try to pick ones that aren't too hefty. So, like, I have, for example, I was bringing this with me. I'm holding up a book. It was We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson that I was reading for a while. So that I took everywhere with me. I have a book of Gothic literature that I've been taking with me as of late. It varies.
Does the book generally fit in your purse?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes I have to carry it, which is a pain. But yes, generally I try to make sure it's a book that can fit in my purse, or the
Okay,
purse
and
fits the book.
yes. And yeah, I think, yeah. I would say I'm pretty simple. I just have my set of car keys and my wallet and my phone. And that's like, I don't have a purse. I have no judgment for the merce. If you are a man and you have a purse, more power to you.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm a simple guy. I don't need much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Like when back when I was in the seminary, I carried around my breviary with me wherever I went. The breviary is a prayer book, also called the Liturgy of the Hours.
Oh.
And yeah, I carry that around everywhere. But now they have an app on the phone for the Liturgy of the Hours. They've had the app for quite a while. Yeah, it just seems like so much of what I need. Like, I would love to carry a book around me with a, eh, I would love to carry around with me a book wherever I go, but I have the Kindle app on my phone. So it's like apps on the phone are sort of replacing the things that, of course, there are things that you can't carry around, like ibuprofen and women things. I don't know why my mind, I have three sisters, so
Yeah,
sometimes my
I know.
mind goes
I hear.
there.
Well, I mean, I think back to Plato and who started writing about the degradation of oral interpretation and oratories. He was very sad that writing had been invented or was being popularized because people were losing the ability to hold great speeches in their head or memorize great tales and be great orators. And so I think the similar thing is happening with books or physical text in that it's been compressed. So we've gone from oral history to the physical phone. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Yes, we won't experience what the previous generation has. That may not be at this point, we don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But it's different, and that's okay.
There is a good book on this subject. It's called Irresistible.
Ooh.
And the subtitle is The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked by Adam Alter.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, if I'm not thinking of a different book, because I tend to do that, I'll go through these spurts where I'll read a lot of different books on one subject. So
Okay.
if I'm remembering correctly, this book goes. And now I'm pretty sure I'm not remembering correctly, but there is a book out there somewhere that goes through the history of technology. And we don't think of books as technology, but books really are a kind of technology. And they replaced something, and something is replacing them.
Yes.
And it's really interesting and fascinating progression, and sort of how the brain, because, we're living in this high-tech world, but we have ancient brains. Evolution takes a long time to kind of catch up with the pace that we're going. And there's a bunch of fascinating books about all of this. But yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And like you said, we have very ancient brains, or some might call it, like, part of our brain is like a lizard brain, basically. It's kind of reptilian and very just necessity, not higher thinking. And I think a lot of technology kind of taps into the lizard brain rather than the higher thinking part. And there's a danger to that. And I think we do need to learn how to rein it in. But yeah, like you said, books are technology, and them being replaced is sad, but maybe it's a good thing. Who knows? We'll have to see. We'll have to stick around for the next 50 years or so, or maybe 100.
Well, I plan on at least the next 50.
Oh, perfect.
And dear listener, we hope you join us for the next 50 years of Shiflitcast. Oh, Caitlin, it's been so great having you on the podcast. This is a patrons only episode. As my last guest said, the ones with the money. I don't actually know if I have any patrons right now. Hmm. So I'm hoping that by publishing these episodes, I will inspire some to take up the yoke of $5 a month, but we'll see. Thank you. Thank you for being on the podcast. I appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship very much. And I'm grateful for everything that you do and are for me.
Well, I can say right back at you, and thank you for having me. You've been a very gracious host.
All right. Happy New Year, Caitlin, and we'll talk soon.
Happy New Year, and take care.
Wizards theme stock media provided by Adam Monroe and Pond5. Shiflitcast is available on all major podcasting platforms and is hosted and produced by Philip J. Shiflit. Copyright 2022. Until next time, friends, be a saint.